On air. Online. On Twitter.
Jennifer Campbell is always on.
Unfiltered, opinionated, and ready to speak her mind at a moment's notice.
This is the Jennifer Campbell Show on 570 News and Rogers TV, Cable 20.
No, there ain't nothing that I gotta prove. You think your words will make me black and blue, but I think I'm pretty with these old boots on. I think it's funny when I drink too much. You try and change me, you can go to hell. 'Cause I don't wanna be nobody else. I like the chip I got in my front teeth. And I got bad tattoos you won't believe. So kick out the jams, kick up the soul. Pour another glass of that rock and roll. Turn up the band, find the hole. Gonna lose control tonight. What do you want from me?
Oh, Friday. You look good. I'm excited for this weekend. You know I never like to wish time away, but I need a weekend. It's been a week, Polly. It's been a week. How do I say this? So what's been happening, and nobody really cares about my life at all, but I'm just going to be defensive for just one second if I could be so indulgent. So Scotty and I are two houses into one. Two houses into one. So, which is a lot of moving and purging and organizing, you know what I mean? And I have a thing, and it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing that I cannot function in a house that's got stuff everywhere. I can't do it. It's not because I'm like, oh, look at what a wonderful housekeeper I am. It's because I literally cannot do anything, and it makes me aggravated, and it makes me annoyed, and so on and so forth. So my poor fiance, I mean, he's just been, and he's very neat and organized too, but I don't think he feels like the urgency to just get it done right now that I feel. So actually not sure that I'm still engaged. I mean, I'm pretty confident, but I mean, I haven't napped this week. Normally I'm napping. Have I been more edgy? A little more irritable, Polly? Tell me the truth, because, you know.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think you're good.
I just want to be sure I'm not treating people poorly because of my lack of sleep or, you know, need to put dishes away right now. So.
Yeah, see, that happens in my house, too, the urgency thing. Like, yeah, okay, I'm going to put away the laundry. Just relax. Or I was going to do the dishes, but.
Now.
Yeah. So one person says it has to be done now, and one person sees no problem with waiting, you know, 3 hours.
Polly, you've been how long have you been married now?
Two and a half years. Almost 2.5 years.
Tell me you don't tell her to relax. Because I'm surprised you're still alive if you do.
I probably have. Although the expression in our house is, calm your turtles.
Calm your turtles.
I don't know what that means, but that's the expression in our house.
Can I? I love it.
Calm your turtles.
Yeah, because I use calm your, but it's always a worse word. Calm your turtles. Totally stealing it.
All
yep,
right.
I'm doing it. So, hey, happy Father's Day weekend, Polly. Are you going to do anything exciting? Or?
Well, on Sunday, I'm going to the Blue Jay game.
You always do a good job with Liam and taking him to ball games.
But on Saturday, the plan is for me to teach Liam how to cut the grass.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, he's what, 14? It's time that he learns how to use a mower.
Now, does he want to participate in this activity with you?
No, I don't think so. I'm forcing him into it.
You know, when I used to complain about, we're going to talk about this later, sayings from your dad used to say, because our fathers, I mean, they just, there's some doozies, things that dads say. Some of them, that we did this on our sister station today, some of them are just hysterical. I don't know how safe they are for radio, but I'll read you the safest ones. Or you can email me the things your dad used to say, jennifer@570news.com. Every time I would complain about a chore or something I had to do, my dad would say, you like to eat, don't you? So I guess that was the price he paid for living in his house. Hi, Daddy. Happy. He usually listens up in Penetanguishene to this show. So hello, Daddy, and happy Father's Day. And I'll talk to you later on this weekend. We're going to talk about parenting, talk about your dad's favorite saying. We'll do that. Also, I wonder if you saw this. What an amazing post from a woman whose name is Corinne McDermott. She's a writer in Toronto, and she wrote about her story of loss after the death of her mother. Her mother took her own life. And Kate Spade's death kind of really triggered and inspired quite an article from her. So we'll talk about that. Did you see this one? With two stories from Newfoundland this morning, actually. A mom who has turned the tables on her daughter as a punishment. She's forced her daughter to wear the same clothes for a week. And of course, she posted it on Facebook, and then people lost it. You know, you're bullying your child, so on and so forth. Is it okay to do that? Is it okay to publicly declare the punishment that you have doled out to your child? We'll get to that one as well. And what does family mean? As the definition of family evolves, so does the law. And this is a very interesting case from Newfoundland as well, Newfoundland and Labrador, where a judge decided that three adults in a polyamorous relationship would be named as parents of a child born within their partnership. It is the first time in Canada that this has happened. And joining us to discuss is Lori Palitza, who's a senior partner in the family law group at Torkin Mains LLP. Good morning, Lori. Thanks for coming on.
Good morning. I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for joining us. Okay, so let's talk about this case. And I think before we start, we should probably clear things up, because I think the word polyamorous carries with it a lot of misconception. I think people mix it up with polygamy or with swingers or with bigamy. So let's clearly define what polyamorous means first.
Well, that's just an interesting question right off the bat. I have to tell you that polyamorous can mean different things to different people. But basically what it means is there are freely consenting adults who are in relationships with two or more other people. And sometimes they can form really strongly bonded family units and live in the same household. Sometimes they may have relationships, strongly bonded relationships outside their household. And sometimes the relationships may be more casual. So the one that this case was about, obviously, was about a household of people living together. Of three people, and the court declared that they were each parents of the child.
So in this case, we have two male partners and a female partner. The female is the mother of the baby who's born into this polyamorous relationship. This is 2017, and this relationship had been stable, going on since June 2015, but none of the people in the relationship were married. And then obviously we know who the mom is, but the biological father of that child was not known.
Yeah, this case actually, as it's reported, is a bit short on facts. Doesn't tell us a lot about the family, but that's one of the things that we do know about this family, or this family unit, I suppose. And they don't know who the biological dad is. And the judge who heard the case said it's actually some of the adhesive that apparently is something that's important to this family. The fact that they actually don't know which one is actually the biological dad.
So and that was done by design. I'm kind of speculating here, so that everybody, you know, there's no kind of real dad, bio dad kind of conversations within this unit. It was important to them that they were all kind of equal partners in the parenting of the child.
I expect that's the case. Of course, the case doesn't say that. But the one thing I should actually mention about, insofar as we know much about polyamorous relationships, one of the things that is fundamental to a polyamorous relationship is transparency and honesty and a great deal of open discussion. Because otherwise, from what I can gather, they don't work very well. So I think this was obviously very planned, as you suggested, and one of the interesting facts about this case.
Sorry, I missed that. What doesn't work very well?
If you're not transparent and honest and have open discussions.
Right. And so. I'm just thinking as we're talking about this, I have there's a listener to this radio station who is openly polyamorous, and I hope that she's listening right now, because I'd love to get her thoughts on Twitter at JenCampbell77. But I've seen that in her discussions, kind of as I watched, things that she's talked about on Twitter, is that the trust, the openness, the communication is just about everything, and that, like you mentioned, it's not feasible without that.
That's right. And it's different than polygamy and bigamy, just coming back to your original question, in bigamous or polygamous relationships, there's actually a marriage ceremony that people go through where they agree to bind themselves to each other, but, there's a lot of binding going on in those relationships with more than one people.
Mm-hmm.
And these relationships, the statistics are very interesting. Insofar as we have any statistics, just in terms of who forms polyamorous relationships and what they look like in Canada.
So, yeah, tell me about that. What kind of numbers are we talking about?
Well, it's really, as far as we know, there's really been, as far as we can see, only one sort of major research piece done, and the research is still in progress. Done in 2016 about polyamorous relationships in Canada. There's some research from the States that suggests that 1 in 500 Americans are involved in polyamorous relationships. The study of Canadians dealt with 547 Canadians. And so they broke them down, and these things I think are kind of interesting. So 35% of them live in BC, 28% in Ontario, and 17% in Alberta. And about 74% are between 25 and 44 years old. And there's some other interesting statistics, too. Only about 20% of the 547 live in a single household. But if they are in one household, in 67% of those cases, it included a married couple.
Okay. So it's kind of sometimes a situation where someone is brought into an existing relationship.
Perhaps was there at the get-go and then others later married.
Right,
I don't know.
Right. Well, that's it. And I think that's what, I'm not sure, let me just recap here. Our guest is Lori Palitza. She's a senior partner in the family law group at Tork and Mains. We're talking about this case that's the first of its kind from Newfoundland, where all three adult members of a polyamorous family have been deemed the child's parents. So it was the adults who brought the case to court because they wanted to be recognized as the parents of the baby, all three of them, after the Newfoundland Ministry of Service refused to do that, to designate them as parents, saying that the Vital Statistics Act only allowed for two parents. So they bring this case to court. And then what happens? How long does a ruling like this take? Is it kind of like a courtroom proceeding? Are there people in there arguing against these three polyamorous adults?
So the case originally, it's not quite clear when it originally came to court. Looks like it was in sort of mid-2017. And at the time, the judge who heard it initially said, gee whiz, you got to give the Registrar of Vital Statistics notice of this case because they should probably have something to say about it because they're the ones that have to keep these records. So that took a little while, and everybody obviously had their lawyers involved. And then they scheduled a hearing for January of 2018, and the decision was reached in April of this year and released. So it's just now sort of creeping through and into our case law that we see, and it is, it's very interesting. It reminds me a little bit of the evolution of same-sex rights that started sort of back in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
But, It takes a little while for these cases to wend their way through the court system. But the reason that the Department of Vital Statistics had to get involved is the legislation in Newfoundland, as it is in many provinces, tends to recognize two parents. And not more than two, unless there are circumstances of artificial insemination, in which case there can be different tests applied as to who the actual parents are.
So how does this change a Canadian law? Does it set precedent? Will we, and like you talked about, it does. It's been, 1995? Ontario was recognizing same-sex adoptions, and we know, that, like you just mentioned, it takes some time for the law to catch up to the evolution of what a family is. So now, will it be easier for other polyamorous families to all be considered parents of the child?
I think, it certainly will. There have been other cases named where three people were named as parents, but not in a polyamorous circumstance. So back in 2007 in Ontario, a lesbian couple wanted to be named as the mothers of the child on the child's birth certificate, and they wanted their friend, who was the sperm donor, but also a friend, and they wanted that friend to continue to be involved with the child. They wanted him to be on the birth certificate as well, and the court granted that order back in 2007. That was in essence a typical coupledom kind of relationship. And the interesting and new part of the way our families are evolving is this one recognizes a family that is not just a couple, but in fact is broader and can be three or more people.
It's a fascinating case, and I have to say, when I was reading it, I was a little surprised. I'm a Maritimer, so don't get mad at me, Maritimers. But as I've seen in my home province of Prince Edward Island, it usually takes we Maritime provinces a little longer to evolve. So it was interesting that it happened in Newfoundland for me.
Well, I thought it was interesting too. Usually, well, and given the statistics that we have, such as they are, I would have thought it would have come out of BC.
Out of BC, yes. Lori Palitza, senior partner at the Family Law Group at Torquin at Mainz. Thanks for your time this morning. Enjoy your weekend.
Thanks so much. Pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Bye-bye. All right, let's do it. I mean, I'm sure there's lots of people who take issue with this story about all three adult members of a polyamorous family being deemed the children's parents. Star 570, 519-570-2545. Let's talk about it. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. I mean, I feel like the family has evolved. It's not just mom and dad anymore. We're in a different place. How do you feel about that? All three adult members of a polyamorous family deemed the child's parents by a Newfoundland judge, the first of its kind, this case, in Canada. We'll take your calls. What does it mean to be a family? You used to say you can't pick your family. I think that we can. Star 570 519-570-2545 at Jen Campbell 77 on Twitter. Jennifer at 570news.com will work for you as well. We're back after this.
We crowdsource our traffic from the bumper to bumper crowd surrounding you.
Real time traffic solutions from sources across the city and you. Your traffic team is 570 News, Kitchener's breaking news, traffic and weather station.
All right, right back into it. Oh, there's it's the 40th anniversary of Greece. Oh my gosh. So, you want to email me and tell me the movie you can watch 100 times? Because I'm quite certain I've seen Grease 100 times. Okay, 111. Who's counting? So let's hear about those movies from you as the morning rolls on. All three adult members of a polyamorous family have now been deemed the child's parents by a judge in Newfoundland. What does family mean as we evolve together? Star 570, good morning, Megan.
Hey, how are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. I thought this story was really interesting. And Jen, you know my story, being in foster care and, having so many people that were in my life that were actually parents to me. I mean, my birth record would be like 2 pages long if I could add everybody's name to it. So, I mean, I think family is not your typical two-parent, one-parent home anymore. And I think this really resonated with me just because there are so many children that come into the foster care system, and a lot of these children get adopted. And in my situation, when I met what I call my family by heart, I was 18. They were my third foster home, and they wanted to adopt me. Now, logistically, it just didn't make sense in terms of the support I would receive. But, I mean, the fact is they are my parents. And if I could add them to my birth record and say these are my parents, I would in a heartbeat. So I think family, especially for those in the system, looks very different than your typical one, two-parent home.
You are the best person I could possibly think of to speak to this, Megan, because I know a lot of people. I'm so happy that you called. Hi. I didn't know it was my Megan. Hi, Megan.
Yeah. it's your Megan.
It's my Megan. And I think that's because people get worried. Oh, gosh, the children are going to be damaged. The children are going to be confused. The children are going to be whatever. But we know that gay couples raise straight kids and straight people raise gay kids. And that really has nothing to do with what we're going to become or whether they become polyamorous or all these things, these fears we get wrapped up in. I think are just that. They're kind of emotional things that actually often aren't true.
It's so true. And, you know, I never met my biological father. So the fact that I have a dad today, and I wish I could have him on a record that says he is my dad, I mean, then I'd be like every other person. That's how it would make you feel,
right.
You know? So
yeah.
There's so many kids who just, it would actually help them to heal to have that record. So I think it's such a bigger picture that it's not black and white here.
No. And Megan, how amazing is your, we need a whole hour for Megan, because talk about a woman who has come through so gracefully, such an interesting and sometimes really tough upbringing. But what an inspiration you are, bringing love to kids. And that just goes to show you what kids just want. Love. They want to be loved.
It's so true.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Hey, you have a happy weekend, girl. We're late. Polly, poor Polly's arms get tired over there when he's trying to wrap me up. I know. Let's go to the newsroom next, and then we're going to talk to Corinne McDermott. She wrote a wonderful piece, and I'm going to get her to read it to you about what the death of Kate Spade meant to her, as she is also someone who has lost someone dear to them to suicide. That's coming up after we go to the newsroom, 570 News.
Most emails get buried in your inbox. 570 News breaking news alerts always get opened. Can't afford not to read them. Brought to you by Libro Credit Union. Prosper here. Sign up today at 570news.com.
Now this car is automatic. It's systematic. It's hydromatic.
Now, Polly, there are parts of this song that are very risque, and I didn't know it until I learned every word to the soundtrack and tried out to be, auditioned to be in the play in high school, to be in Grease. Desperately wanted to be Sandy. Guess who I was? Rizzo. Of course I was. I mean, it's not really a shock to anybody. I just wanted to be the good girl for once. It's the 40th anniversary of Grease. And if you want to email me that movie that you have watched 100 times, because this has got to be mine. I love Grease so much that I actually love Grease 2. Everybody hated Grease 2. I loved Grease 2. Michelle Pfeiffer was in it. Best song, Cool Rider. It's on my phone. I listen to it all the time. So if you want to have some fun with us on Friday morning, email me that movie that you've seen 100 times. And you'll probably watch 100 more. Jennifer@570news.com. Okay, so we're gonna save some time so we can talk about your dad's favorite saying. You guys are sending those to me already, too. Your dad's favorite sayings as we celebrate Father's Day coming up this weekend. What an amazing piece of writing that probably some of you saw over the past, I guess it's about 10 days ago now. And after the news that Kate Spade had taken her life, of course, the conversation starts again about mental illness, about suicide, about what it means to be a parent who takes their own life. And we start hearing a lot of judgments very quickly from people. a lot of how could you, a lot of whispering and so on and so forth. And I read this piece, and I hope some of you did as well. And it is by a writer from Toronto. Her name is Corinne McDermott, and she's going to join us this morning to share her story. Hi, Corinne. Thanks for taking the time.
Hi, good morning.
I wonder, do you want to read the post? Is that probably the best way to tell your story, or would you like to kind of talk about it in a less kind of, you know, scripted way?
Yeah, no, I'd prefer that, actually.
Yeah, let's do that. I'm gonna tweet it out, actually, the piece that you wrote. And gosh, the opening line, I'm sure you've heard many people, because I've heard you do some interviews about it. The opening line really just stops one in their tracks. So I'm just going to read that so people understand what we're talking about here. Corinne, your opening line said, "Tucked inside my Kate Spade wallet is a photocopy of my mother's suicide side note." And that, of course, just resonates in so many ways for people.
Yeah, you know, and I think I was just so, I guess inspired is the appropriate word to use, but I don't know if it's entirely correct. But, you know, I work in front of a computer screen all day. I've got various, you know, feeds happening, and when I saw the news about Kate Spade, and then, you know, of course, all the really macabre interest in the note, you know, it was obviously devastating. Anyone who's gone through something similar understands that as soon as you hear of a famous person taking their own life, you are just sort of immediately brought back to that moment. And I, you know, literally was, you know, didn't even give it a thought in that regard, went to grab my wallet to go buy a coffee, and then noticed it was Kate Spade. So that kind of brought everything sort of into clear focus.
I think anybody who's dealt with any kind of loss realizes that, you know, the world and the universe can present you with, you know, reminders that simply bring you to your knees in the most ordinary of moments. But I would not want to speak for you, but I would guess that as the daughter of someone who took their life, that it must be tenfold.
Yeah, you know, and it's, you know, sadly, you know, Kate Spade, and then, you know, later last week, Anthony Bourdain, like those are just the most recent instances of, you know, celebrity suicide. There have, you know, been a lot, and obviously far, far too many since my mom took her life. But, you know, the one thing that I was grateful, you know, one of the reasons of which there are many that I'm grateful social media didn't exist when I was, you know, younger, is the fact that now, of course, everybody shares their opinion, often an uninformed opinion on, you know, the whys and the hows of people choosing to do this. And I just could not stand the thought of yet more people, you know, dragging this woman's name through the mud. Mm-hmm. And, you know, knowing that she had a young daughter, knowing that there's this macabre interest in what a suicide note might say or what it could reveal or tell. I honestly don't know what possessed me to write it and post it. I just kind of did it.
And you talk about you were 17 when your mother died, and you talk about that macabre interest in the suicide note. Why do you think that is? Why are we kind of obsessed with details that we certainly don't have any business to?
Well, I think because people just don't understand, and they want to know why.
Mm.
And there's this notion that the note, that someone's last words would be this sort of, you know, poetic reasoning, and then all of a sudden everything will become clear. And I just know, you know, using my mother's note as an example, it's, you know, it's not this, you know, this great literary, you know, last words that's poetic or meaningful. It's kind of details. It's, you know, sorry, you know, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and so I guess the real question that people want answered when somebody does this is why.
Is why, yeah.
And, you know, a note never reveals that. And even if it did, a survivor would never accept it, because, a suicide note could actually literally list, here are reasons, you know, 1, 2, and 3 why I am doing this. But the person who that note is to will always feel that they could have or should have done something to stop it.
Yeah, and if I can just read a little bit of your post, because, and I heard you speak about this, and gosh, did it make sense. You say, when your parent takes their own life, you're still here, but you're also left behind. In the first line of my note, my mother said she was sorry. According to reports, the first line of B's note, her mother said it wasn't her fault. In time, I have come and B will come to understand these things, but a survivor of suicide struggles with more than just grief. We're still here, but we're also left behind. We weren't enough. The thought of missing us wasn't painful enough to decide to stay. We weren't enough. We weren't smart enough to fix the problem or strong enough to help. We weren't enough. You chose to leave us with pain so you could end yours. It was only when I became a parent myself that I could understand my mother's choice by not understanding it. And please tell me about that, because when I heard you speak about it, I mean, it really gave me the goosebumps. And I, from a mother to a mother, I got it. You made something click in my head.
Well, you know, I guess that's what I mean when people, you know, sort of, you know, have opinions on why someone would choose to do this. Because they say, you know what, I can't understand how, dot, dot, dot. And for me, that was sort of like, you know, the light bulb went off. It's like, bingo, you can't understand. Be grateful that you can't understand. Like, that means that you have never felt that things were horrible enough for you to do this.
Yeah, I mean, imagine, and again, like you say, Corinne, you can't imagine the kind of pain that would lead someone to take their life. You can't imagine it. And you say again, like, we're lucky. We're lucky if we've never experienced that kind of pain. And you kind of found that in your children when you looked at them and said, I couldn't even fathom leaving them. So how ill was my mom? How sad was my mom that she could?
Well, yeah. And I mean, like, that's, you know, that's something that it took me a really long time to grasp. You know, in sort of certainly in the initial stages, like when you're young and you experience this, you know, all of a sudden suicide becomes an option, right? Like, you know, maybe you had never thought of that before. But now it's, you know, it's something that, like I said, is an option. So
yeah.
Once I, you know, obviously I grew up, I got a life, I got married, I had kids, and I would look at them and I would think, how could she leave me? And you know, in some cases prior to sort of this understanding, it was, you know, well, she could leave me because I wasn't enough, you know.
Yeah,
but now
before that,
it was,
yeah,
it clicked, you know. It just clicked. It was like my mother thought that I would be better off without her.
Yeah,
and she honestly believed that. And this, and when you're an adult and you can, you know, look back in hindsight and you can rationalize things 10 ways to Sunday, and you can understand that she felt that way because she was sick, and you can understand that she felt that way because of a number of reasons. But when you can look back and say, that is the mind, that is the mind of illness. That is a mental illness telling you that it isn't true. It's never been true. It will never be true. Nobody would ever feel that they were better off without the person that they love.
Our guest is Corinne McDermott. She is a writer who wrote a compelling, powerful story of her feelings after Kate Spade's death and taking her back to the death of her own mother. I got the amount of empathy that just pours from your words is just so astonishing. And I know that you came by that at such a high price, but I want to, because again, you really point out things that I don't think the rest, people who haven't experienced a family member taking their life, I don't think that these are obvious things to them. So just let me read this part as well. You write, Corinne, a couple of years after my mom died, I attended a suicide survivors group and met a young woman whose mother jumped into Niagara Falls. Every time she'd see or hear a Marine Land ad, she'd think of her mom. And since then, I do too. B will see her mom's name, Kate Spade's daughter is B, on storefronts, on the subway, on the street, just about everywhere women are. Women who were proud of their handbags, who earned them, who saved for them and looked at them, and as Kate, as aspirational, classic, elegant, successful. I love my Kate Spade wallet. It cost $150 at an outlet store. That's the most I've ever spent on such an item. I bought it with a gift card I won at a social media conference for women. When I'd pull it out of my non-Kate Spade purse, I'd feel a twinge of pride and a twinge of guilt because designer items really aren't in my budget. Sometimes I feel annoyed because the pull tab on the zipper broke and I wish I could fix it. I spent too much just to replace it. When something is beautiful, we have a hard time accepting flaws. God, that is, it's just so poignant.
Thank you.
It is.
You know, I wish I could say that I like I said, you know, I kind of write for a living and I agonize over every word, and that literally just poured out of me.
Gosh.
On the subway home. So
it's, I feel like you made people have those kind of little pieces fall into place, because I think perhaps all of us need to admit that we have thought that way. How could you? How selfish? We toss around a lot of words that we just don't have the right or the understanding to do when something like this happens. And I think you really brought understanding to those of us who have not, you know, curated empathy the way you have, again, at such a big price. So what a beautiful piece you wrote.
Well, thank you. I feel a bit weird. It's been shared so many times. I'm not typically an oversharer on Facebook. It's mostly, funny pictures of my kids. But it really seems to have resonated with a lot of people on a number of different levels. So, if it helps even just one person, then I'm grateful for it.
I think that's certainly the case. I want to ask you just before I let you go too, Corinne. We've heard a lot over the past couple of weeks every time we talk about mental health. And you mentioned in your piece, if you're struggling, please reach out. You matter. Let your loved ones help you. They matter. Mental illness affects the whole family. Suicide does too. And we've heard some ideas around this, please reach out, that it's up to the rest of us to be checking in on people, even if we think they're strong, even if we think they've never been depressed, or that we need to really consistently check up on each other and not wait for people to reach out to us. What do you feel about that sentiment?
I definitely agree with it. I mean, I definitely understand it's difficult to ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
It is available, but sometimes it's even difficult, once you have it. And help itself is a process, often a very painful one. This isn't easy for anybody at any time, but, the alternative is worse. So it's worth it, It's really, really worth it. And even if now that conversation can be a little easier because we're all kind of talking about it now, as opposed to it just feeling like, the mere mention of it sucks the air out of the room.
Yeah. Yeah. Corinne McDermott, I thank you so much for the brave soul that it took to share your story and to open some minds and some hearts. So thanks for doing it. Thanks for sharing such an intimate thing with the rest of us. I think it has done quite a lot of good. Thank you.
I appreciate that. Thank you so
Thank
much.
Thank you. Thanks, Corinne. Enjoy this weekend.
You too.
9:49. Gosh, I mean, doesn't that just make you get it? Oprah used to call those aha moments. When you finally just get something. And I just thought it was so unbelievable how Corinne said, she didn't understand how her mother could leave her. How could you leave me? How could you leave me? And then she has her own children and looks at them and loves them, and in their eyes says, well, that's how ill my mother was. Thank goodness I don't understand that. Unbelievable piece from Corinne McDermott. Let's celebrate a little bit before we go. We do have a very big weekend coming up. We're going to celebrate dads this weekend. And if you want to talk about the things your dad says, always said, or remember him a little bit with us, we'd love to do that with you at Star 570 at 519-570-2545. At Jen Campbell 77 on Twitter. Let's celebrate your dad after this. 570 News.
The power, the energy from a crowd. It's unmistakable. The ones who feel it the most. The Kitchener Rangers.
Busting down the middle. He scores! Up and out!
The Kitchener. Hear Rangers play here. 570 News.
Anniversary of Greece. And yep, Katrina, Sarah, Amanda all say it. That's it. That's my movie, Jennifer. That's the one I've watched 100 times. I'm going to watch it 100 more times. You know what the best thing about this movie was? My parents. Remember, I told y'all about my good Christian mama. I wasn't allowed to watch Dirty Dancing because of some of the content. They let me watch Greece. There was just a bit. Hello, Rizzo. I mean, I don't know. Maybe because there was, I don't know, singing all the time. They did that in Dirty Dancing too. Anyway, 40th anniversary of Greece. If you need to feel a little bit older today, it is Father's Day weekend, and we're going to celebrate with your dad's favorite sayings. So let's talk about those. You guys all know that I am. Just head over heels for my dad. I have the best dad. And he is such a big part of who I am. And I love him so very much. And he is just responsible for a lot of things, including making us laugh a lot. And good advice and wonderful career advice, too. But he sure did say some pretty funny things. Every time he would try to leave the house when I was growing up, I was so attached to him that I would be desperate to go with him. So every time he tried to leave, even if he was walking to the shed, I'd be like, Daddy, where are you going? And he would, without skipping a beat, every time say to me, I'm running away from home. Can I come? No. So let's talk about the funny things your dad said, or maybe the good advice. I think from my dad too, I mean, great businessman. My dad always would say, hire good people and let them do their jobs, which I think is such great, great advice for any of us, whether we're working or hiring people to work for us. Okay, you guys have some great examples. Jordan says, my dad always said, tough bananas, Julius. That's what you get for going into politics. I'm 28. I still have no idea what that means. Oh, I love it. Tough bananas, Julius. That's what you get for going into politics. I don't know what it means either. Is it a movie? Maybe we'll have to do some research on that. Molly says, my father would say, accidents cause people. Sarah Jane, my father would always say, A, B, see you later, when I was being nosy and he was talking with someone else. Oh my gosh, your dads are funny. Kathy tells us, when my sisters and I wanted to do something that dad knew we didn't have time for, it was always, let's not and say we did. I still say that 50 years later. Things your dad always said, star 570, 519-570-2545. Rob says, I'd love to share, but you'd lose your license. Okay, thank you, Rob. We'll stay away from that one. You're a real skippy. Kelsey says, your dad used to say, you're a real skippy. Beth, oh, this is a popular one. Beth says, my father used to say, go ask your mother. That's a blame. That's a obligatory responsibility shift right there. Oh, good one. Somebody from our Facebook page says, my father used to fart and say, oh, good, that still works. Maybe we should have done a segment on what your mom was saying when your dad was saying all of these things. Chris says, my dad used to still yell streaker when he came out of the shower and walked back to his room every time. That's good. Oh, and Nikki, this is one I think everybody's going to relate to. You know, when you'd be watching television with your father and he'd have the remote in his hand and then he'd fall asleep. You could hear him snoring for crying out loud. And then you'd go to take the remote, and what would he say? I'm just resting my eyes. I was watching that. I'm just resting. No, you were fully in full snoring mode, Daddy. Happy Father's Day to all of the dads. I hope that you enjoy this gorgeous weekend. Thanks for taking the time. Jeff Pickle is coming in to take you through the next few hours. I will talk to you on Monday.